Welcome to Tucker Center Talks with Dr. Nicole Lavoie. This week, Anna Gorovich and I talked to Tucker Team alum Hannah Silva Breen about her groundbreaking research on body image, weight bias, and body confidence in sport contexts, and the ways she is using her research to create change for athletes, coaches, and sports psychology professionals. You won't want to miss this talk. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center, a first-of-its-kind, world-class research center and thought leader around girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I talk to, amplify, and support my colleagues, amazing women who study sport and gender. We talk about research and the ways we're changing the world through the context of sport to be a better place. We let data tell the story. So let's jump into it. In this podcast, Anna Gorovich and I, who is a current research assistant in the Tucker Center and doctoral student, will talk to Tucker Team alum Hannah Silva Breen, who is currently a doctoral student in sport and exercise and performance psychology, and if that's not enough, a master's student in clinical mental health counseling at West Virginia University. She is also a fellow Gustavus Adolphus alum, also known as HSB, and a fervent lover of animals. Welcome, Hannah.
Hello, happy to be here.
We're so excited to talk to you this morning. So let's start with your origin story. How did you get involved in the Tucker Center?
Well, it did start at Gustavus Adolphus College way back in Go Gusties in 2017. I was introduced to the Tucker Center and the work, specifically like the Women Coaching Report Card, developing physically active girls, and that inspired me to become or apply for the Gender Equity Summer Internship, where I was very grateful and honored to serve two summers in a row. And then after that, I stayed on part-time as a research assistant, continued to work on things like the Women Coaches Report Card, the longitudinal analysis of head coach turnover, before I formally started my master's in 2020, assisting with things like coaching her body confidence sport and the many amazing events that we put on.
It seems both you and Anna, the pathway to doing graduate work in the Tucker Center was our internship.
And I'll even jump in and say that when I was an intern, Hannah was one of, I guess, a research assistant at the time. I don't know what your exact title was, maybe finishing up your master's, but just in terms of the family tree, was an incredible mentor and leader and taught me so much and was also someone that helped really cement for me that I wanted to work at the Tucker Center after. And now I sit at Hannah's former desk.
Aww.
It's a very prestigious desk that you two have sat in. A lot of great people there.
Yeah.
So after we're going to talk about some of your research in a minute, Hannah, but after you graduate from the University of Minnesota with your master's, tell us a little bit what you're doing now.
Right now, as you mentioned, working on two degrees. Actually, they're both very practitioner based, but also have some of that scholarly work as well. Specifically, some of that research looking at like body image and embodiment with women athletes, disordered eating behaviors in collegiate women, weight bias within the sports psychology profession, as well as consulting, mental performance consulting with multiple teams and individual athletes, and gearing up for my counseling practicum in the spring as well. So, and teaching undergrad classes. So doing a lot.
Well, it sounds like you have your plate full with multiple degrees, multiple lines of research, and also hopefully trying to have a little bit of balance and a life as well. I do want you to talk a little bit about how your experience as a coach, basketball coach, which is an important part of your journey, has influenced your work.
Oh, that is a very good question. I think my experience as a basketball coach, specifically with girls basketball, and I've coached from, fourth grade up until 12th grade girls, seeing the different developmental needs from each grade, each age group, and seeing both the positive and negative effects that sport can have. Now, I try to emphasize all the positive, try to facilitate or foster a mastery, motivational climate, need supportive, all of that kind of thing. But then I've also seen as an athlete, but especially as a coach, when athletes will tell me about maybe their school programs or former coaches they've had that have been really harmful to their development and mental health, even sometimes physical health. And it's hard to watch that and feel like I can't do much about it. So I feel like that want to help, that want to make an impact, then turns towards that research piece of, okay, if I can't, go to that school and change this other coach's behavior, maybe I can do some change in the sporting environment through the research that we do.
Yeah, I remember you would come into the Tucker Center and, after a practice or a tournament over the weekend where you'd be talking with the girls and they would just say some heartbreaking things around their own bodies and talking about their bodies. And you would hear from them about what other coaches have said or done that have sort of impacted their own self-esteem and confidence. And I think what I really appreciate about your work is that along the journey, you have been working with girls as a coach and as a scholar. And so you bring both lenses to that experience. And now you're carrying that forward with your doctoral work as well. So, although you're not coaching right now, because it sounds like you have enough to do.
Not currently. Luckily, our season is in like the spring and summer. So actually in West Virginia, I kind of come on late now just as the assistant role because I can't be there the full time, but still coaching, just not
Okay.
right in this moment.
Important. It's so important to have that inform our lenses and inform our work. So let's talk about your master's thesis, which I was a little reticent to approve because it was very ambitious. So you were, as Anna mentioned, you were helping develop coaching her and body confidence sport, which we'll talk about in a minute. But part of that, you developed the Coach Self-Efficacy Body Image Scale, also known as the SEBIS. So tell us your high level, why did you decide to do a scale development for your master's thesis, which is very unusual?
Why? Why?
Why?
For a few reasons. The first was, sitting in those meetings and just taking in and learning a lot and wanting to help in any way that I can make both of those projects impactful and successful. I was thinking, okay, well, if we really, really want this, like, to have, evidence-based support, we need like an actual validated scale to test what we're actually trying to change, which in one of the projects was the upskilling coaches and educating them about how to be supportive to athletes' body image. And there's nothing out there to really test that. So I threw out the idea, I still hadn't decided on my master's thesis project. I was like, what if we did this? I had no idea how much work it would actually take. You kind of alluded to that and were like, I don't know about that, which I fully was like, okay, if Dr. Lavoie is saying it's too much, then maybe it's too much. But I think,
But you did it
but
anyway.
we did it anyway. I think because of the incredible support from the Tucker team and the Center for Appearance Research, our colleagues there who helped support and help teach me how to actually do a scale development and validation. If I had done it completely on my own, no help at all, I don't think it would have finished or finished and been an actual good product. So lots of help, and it was needed.
And maybe for better and for worse, for my stress level the past couple of years is that your amazing scale inspired other scales. And we created the gender essentialism scale over the past year, as you know, because I would panic text you over and over again. How do I do this? Where did you do this? What do we do? And like you, and so Kat, Dr. Kat Schneider and I, the Center for Appearance Research, shout out Kat, one of our favorite people.
We love Kat.
Yay, Kat.
Use your paper as a model to make other scales because you are absolutely right that we need sports-specific validated tools to help measure change if we want to create change in these spaces, whether it's body image or gender bias, gender essentialism, stereotypes, all these things. And there's no way for us to be able to track that, then it's kind of hard to understand what we're doing and how we can do it better. And so, yeah, so your brilliant idea led to a legacy of other work that I am now very proud of, but during the time was
You're
very
like,
hard.
Hannah, why did you have to inspire this?
Yeah. So who knew when you two embarked upon some of your graduate work that you would be developing scales, which is really hard. And I will say kudos to both of you that these scales are now published. Almost published. Our gender essentialism scale is just almost in press, but Hannah's master's thesis is published and you can look that up. It's a great model scale and people are starting to use it. So that's what we want. And my observation of watching both of you do scale development is that the hardest part, and you can agree to disagree, is the recruitment because you need a lot of people to take the scale so you have the power to run the analyses. And both of you spent a lot of time recruiting participants for your scales. Do you want to say what advice would you give for young scholars who also want to do scale development? What did you learn in one sentence about recruitment?
Monetary incentives.
Okay.
I guess that's not a full sentence,
Well,
but
it was a statement. We'll let that go. Okay, Anna, what did you learn?
I did not have monetary incentives, and I remember asking Hannah, how did she recruit? And you were like, we pay people, which would definitely helps. Mine probably was being annoying on email and emailing tons and tons of different people and following up and just staying on it, which like took a lot of time. But also, I think it's a scale that people like when it's a project that people care about and they want to be involved in it. So I think that's a good test of if your project is relevant and applicable to the real world is if coaches want to participate in it.
Yep. And there is a notable funny story of Anna's recruitment process. She was emailing so many people that the University of Minnesota shut down her email account because they thought she was a spammer.
I mean, was I spamming? Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Maybe.
All in the glory of research, though.
Yes, I learned that lesson as well. The exact max amount of emails you can put in a blind copy in Google.
In Google, yes. Okay. So since we're talking about body confidence sport, just for listeners that aren't familiar with it. So, body confidence sport is a first of its kind, scientifically proven set of coaching tools to build body confidence in 11 to 17-year-old girls. And as you mentioned, Hannah, it was co-developed with Dove and Nike in partnership with us at the Tucker Center and our colleagues at the Center for Appearance Research, and included input from girls and coaches from six countries. And what Body Confidence does is provides coaches with the materials they need to increase girls' body confidence, body image, and self-esteem through sport. So, Hannah, you were an integral part of the Body Confidence Sport team. So, what was that experience like for you as a young scholar? You know, joining a multinational industry academic partnership team. What did you learn?
First off, what was it like? Very intimidating at first because all of the reasons you just mentioned, but in the best way. And it was truly an incredible thing to be a part of. I learned a lot.
We could probably spend three podcasts on what you learned, but distill
Right.
it down for us.
I think I improved my research skills being part of some of the research that was behind the actual program development and all the steps, going forward, maybe backward a little bit, then forward again, that process. And the what it's like to work with corporate stakeholders as well. Like that was brand new, and I think unique in kind of academia. So that was really cool to be a part of, seeing both the joys and maybe some hurdles that you don't really see elsewhere, especially being a global multi-organization partnership, specifically, time zones, Zoom. But I think the coolest piece, and where I re
And doing it during a pandemic.
Yes.
So
Yes.
all of this happens on Zoom while we are all, in lockdown. So that was
Yep.
another challenge for all of us.
Yeah. And trying to run trials during, it wasn't peak COVID at that point, but it was still, there were still restrictions that we had to follow. So that was difficult to navigate, but learned a lot, and I think learned how to stay resilient, I guess, and to keep going, because there were times, because it takes a long time, and a lot of us, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, I can get impatient when I'm really excited about something. And I think I really had to learn that patience, but when it also means something so deeply to myself, like this wasn't just kind of a random project. This was something that if I were an athlete still to this day, like it would have changed my life truly. Like that kept me pushing to keep going, even when it was hard, even when I was calling, cold calling coaches for hours and hours a day, trying to get them to test this product. It kept me motivated. And so learning to find that passion in the work that you do really helps.
I love how you put that about like this is what you needed when you were an athlete, and thinking about just the long-term impact of that is that we know so many athletes and coaches would benefit so much for this. I totally agree. I think that was so well said about like just the patience it takes and the resilience, because in academia, I think, and maybe I'm just speaking from my own experience, like we're used to working on a project that might last for like 6 months or a year, maybe at most, of like publishing a paper and collecting the data, or working at a lot of different projects at the same time, and they don't feel so long term. Where a project like this took years and years and years to then even just become like a real website. Celebrating those small wins along the way, I think, is hard. Especially we're not used to that type of workflow. And so I love how you said like keeping that mission at the forefront of we're building something that's a lot bigger than us or a lot bigger than just a publication.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, the pieces of advice that I would give anyone who wants to do this kind of project or any long-term research project when it gets hard, and it does, is that you always, and this is what I do, I go back to my why. Why are we doing this? Who does it impact? How is this going to change the system? And that's what gets me up in the morning and keeps me focused and driven, is I always go back to the bigger picture of who does this impact. And when, we're in the weeds of the research process, sometimes you're like, is this ever going to see the light of day? And why am I doing this? And I think that's the Lavoie lesson in this, is like take a big step back and look at the impact. Like, what is the final goal of this project, and stay focused there, because sometimes we do get bogged down.
Yeah, I would also say the team, like the teamwork, also helped keep that resilience high.
Yes.
Like, if we didn't, from my own personal perspective, if we didn't have like the cohesion, the support that we did have in our working team, like, I think that would have made a very big difference as well. So I'm glad we had that and had each other.
Yeah, absolutely. As we like to say, no good work happens alone. And that is, this project is certainly a exemplar of that.
So Hannah, we've spent a lot of time talking about some of your really exciting projects that you've done at the Tucker Center, but I want to know, what are you working on right now that you're super excited about?
Ooh. So I'm excited about everything. But I'll tell you just kind of the highlights. So I think the top of the list right now, especially because it's really close to being done, is a research study I'm finishing up with Dr. Kat Schneider.
Go
Can't
cat.
get rid of that relationship. I love, yeah, she's amazing. And we're examining weight bias and body image self-efficacy among sports psychology professionals. So also using the scale that we co-developed. And it's really exciting for me because one, weight bias is a topic that I am really passionate about and think it really is kind of the macro level kind of underpinning of why we have body image stress and low confidence in at least like our North American society, especially. And it's a mixed method study. So we have like the quantitative data of those patterns and trends, but also a lot of candid qualitative responses of sports psychology professionals, like perspectives on is this an issue from what they think? What's the scope of practice?
Spoiler alert, I'm going to say it is an issue.
Yeah, but you got to stay, you got to try to stay objective.
Let the data tell the story, right? Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Absolutely. And then reading when I asked or when we asked, is this an issue? And basically, please explain. Also, spoiler, there was so many responses that helped kind of validate my feelings. Like, 'cause sometimes I can feel in the sports psych field more so in body image instead of mental performance. I would say I can feel like I'm in a little isolated, I would say. And to see responses that echo exactly what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling completely unprompted was really validating and then helped again motivate to get this done, to keep pushing for this. And there were also some that completely said the opposite of what I think and believe, and to read those to be able to better understand where other people are coming from. So then we can, meet people where they're at, which is one another thing that I'm trying to get better at.
Yeah, and so just for those listeners who don't maybe understand what weight bias is, can you give us a definition?
So it's negative beliefs and opinions and perspectives on people who have higher weight, basically. So it can be implicit or explicit. We used a scale that kind of included both. Like it can be a belief that one's weight is completely your own fault or under your own control. So somebody who weighs a lot more, well, that's their doing. That has nothing to do
Right,
with.
more of a neoliberal approach
Yes.
to weight management.
Yes. And so there's that side. And then there's also kind of the, I would say, subtle ways of like, I wouldn't date anybody or I wouldn't hire anybody of someone who's weighed more. So yeah, I'd say that's how I would define it.
I'm wondering, Hannah, from maybe this research project amongst sports psychologist professionals or even your other research. And of course, being at the Tucker Center, we do things always from a gendered perspective. But I'm wondering if, and I think these things maybe in cultural narratives are viewed more as like women's issues or girls' issues. But I'm curious about how you have seen the gender dynamics come about of are sports psychologists equally concerned about body image and weight bias issues with male athletes as they are with female athletes.
That's a really good question, and I haven't asked it from that perspective, actually. We were looking at it more so, is there a gender difference in the actual sports psych professional? So kind of like when we
That was going to be my question. Like, is there a difference between men and women sports psychology professionals and weight bias?
I will tell you, because I'm seeing similar trends to when we did the scale development for body image self-efficacy, where women coaches reported significantly higher self-efficacy around body image than men coaches. And we also, that was also a mixed method. So we got some free responses. And one of the responses I remember is, well, it's not a problem in baseball. It's not a problem in, I coach men or I coach boys, so it's not a problem for us.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so that's about body image. So it's a little different than weight bias, but I do believe that we'll likely see similar trends. And, you know, I could talk for a long time about why I think that is. Specifically, like you said, body image is a girl's issue, it's a women's issue. And so they're naturally know more about it, are taught more, you know, because we're seen as like they're more at risk, whereas actually everybody is at risk in the society that we live in, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I'm really interested to see how you're going to carry that line of research forward, and hopefully my call to action for you, which I know you've already thought about, is using what you find to go into the sports psychology world, like ASP or APA, and educate sports psychology professionals on how to, reduce the impact of their weight bias and stereotypes.
That is exactly my goal with this.
Of course.
Absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. So I know you have so many exciting research projects, but without explaining maybe the other two or three or four, I don't know how many you have going on, but give us just like, I'm also working on, X and Y, and then we'll wrap this up.
Yeah, great. The other project I'm working on for my qualifying, which is kind of my pre-dissertation, is embodiment in among women collegiate athletes. So looking, taking more of a holistic approach to how women engage their bodies in the world, in sport. And so I'm really excited about that. And then my third project is taking an already existing data set from the American College of Mental Health and looking at data of eating disorder prevalence, weight change behaviors, weight perceptions among minority collegiate women athletes and non-athletes. So seeing if there's kind of a difference if sport helps, hurts, or what's that kind of relationship or lack thereof.
Interesting. Well, we'll have to have you back to talk about these other projects in more depth. But I just love all the work, and I love this cohesive body of work that you're putting together and carving out a niche for yourself. So I'm going to turn it over to Anna as we wrap this up.
Yeah, I think this issue, of course, is, I think, talked about so much more, which is a great thing that we're finally talking about this issue that's been around for so long in women's sports and just in our gendered world. And so every time someone comes and asks me, like, if we know anything about, body image or doing any work, I turn them to you. I'm like, email Hannah Silverbrine. So it's just so cool to see, like, the growth over the past few years. And as someone that I really admire, you have given me so much advice and have helped me so much over the past few years. But I'm wondering for our listeners, what advice could you give to young women scholars and researchers?
When you sent me this question, I thought about it a lot and I wrote down many different notes. And I think what it all boiled down to was trusting your gut and listening to your emotions. And I think, especially as women in academia and really any field where we're leaders in, like emotions are often seen as a weakness. We shouldn't let our emotions get in the way, shouldn't be like we're too emotional, what have you. But especially as I'm learning more about the counseling side and psychology, like our emotions tell us things way before our brain knows what we're thinking. And so I would give advice of truly listening to your emotions, know what they're telling you, and knowing that that is a strength. Listen to that feeling in your chest. What brings you joy? What kind of environment do you thrive in or don't thrive in? Because you don't want to just go with what you think you should do, even if it's not feeling good for you, because that's how you burn out. That's how you become super unhappy with the work that you do. So listen and feel those emotions, is what I would say.
That's such good advice, Hannah, and a unique piece of advice that we've had here on Tucker Center Talks. And I think your advice about listening to your gut and trusting it. And a lot of times you'll tell people that and they're like, "But I don't know what that feels like. I don't know what you're talking about." And so there's a whole nother level of teaching people how to tune into that.
Yes, absolutely. And that it is a skill, I would say. Some people it can come more naturally. Some people you have to work at it. I would say mine's kind of a mixture of both because I am a highly anxious person by nature. So sometimes I have to be like, is this anxiety, like true anxiety, like something's wrong? Like, is this what this is telling me? Or is this excitement? Am I excited, but maybe feeling nervous to do it right or do it wrong? Right. So, like, those are very different, but they can feel similar in my body. So, having to like figure that out, it's a process, especially, trial and error as well.
I'm smiling throughout you giving that answer because, in the best way possible, that was like the quintessential most Hannah Silverbrine answer you could have given. In the best way possible, because you're absolutely right, but you have told me that so many times. And as like your friend and as someone who like has worked with you for a while, it's just like you're right every time. So yeah, you're right that it also is something that's super marginalized in our world of, and we're told to avoid that. And there's other gender dynamics around that. So I appreciate you highlighting that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And as someone who does trust her gut a lot and have learned how to do that over the years, I can think of a handful of times I've gone against my gut and I've been wrong every time. And I'm like, I knew that. I shouldn't have done that. I should have listened to my gut. I know better. So, but I also give myself some grace in that too. Okay, so last, we're going to end with a speed round. Okay, so there's three speed round questions.
Ooh.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, so what is at the top of your playlist right now?
Oh gosh, Billie Eilish, everything. Her latest album.
Okay, love it. Okay, who's your favorite badass woman right now?
Kamala Harris.
Absolutely. And what woman scholar has influenced your current work?
Dr. Kat Schneider, I would say.
Kat. I'm feeling a pull to have Dr. Kat Schneider on Tucker Center Talk. So we will make that happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Hannah, it's been a pleasure to have you on Tucker Center Talks, and that is a wrap for this episode of Tucker Center Talks. Be sure to check out our many free evidence-based resources of the Tucker Center on our website at tuckercenter.org, including bodyconfidencesport.com and coachingher.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Thank you to our producer and Tucker team member, Lindsay Hofer, and thank you for listening to Tucker Center Talks. As we wrap, give yourself grace, support others, and let data tell the story in ways that help us all accelerate systems change for girls and women in sport. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie.
And I'm Anna Gorvich.
And we are signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport.